fasten your seatbelts, and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip. Hunger and homelessness have been pervasive issues in central and northern Wisconsin for many years, but the problem becomes even more crucial when children are involved. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51. The 11th Annual Wisconsin Poverty Report, released in June by the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Institute for Research on Poverty, revealed that about 10% of the state's population lives below the federal poverty level. That includes about 10% of the state's children. And according to Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction data, homelessness continues to plague students throughout the state as well. More than 18,500 children are living in hotels, shelters. Some are even living on the streets. About a third of those students are right here in central and northern Wisconsin. Joining me today is Jim Nick, a Wausau insurance agent who has raised thousands of dollars over the last couple of years for homeless students in our area. He's also been supplying them with key essentials like socks and shoes, backpacks, personal hygiene items that are then distributed by local schools. Also joining me today is Tom Rao, who spent the last two decades as executive director of the Neighbor's Place, that is a community center, providing a hand up to residents of Marathon County and the surrounding communities. We are also joined today by Bonnie Beverstock. She is co-founder of Empty Bowls in Stevens Point. That is a community project to raise money for local hunger prevention efforts. So Jim, Tom, Bonnie, welcome to Route 51. So glad you're here.
Thank you.
We'll take listener calls and questions, too. You can join the conversation by calling 800-780-9742. Now, Tom, I understand you're retiring at the end of the year?
Yeah, December 31st will be my last official day at the Neighbor's Place.
Okay. I heard official. What does that mean exactly?
Well, you know, it'll always be, have a place in my heart. It's been a wonderful organization. I've had it's been the best job I've had in my entire working career. And I'm looking forward to them moving on to new and greater things. And who knows? My head may pop in there every once in a while.
I have a feeling that it might, yes. But we do have listeners from all over. So maybe you could explain the organization's mission for people who might not be familiar with The Neighbor's Place.
Well, basically, we're a community organization that's there to be people helping people. We're a little over 30 years old, and the people that formed The Neighbor's Place, I think, were people that took a look at our community, and they saw people in need, and they said, what is going to happen to these people if we don't stop and help them? And so we run a large food pantry. We also have a food bank that works with other food pantries in the area. We have an emergency furniture and basic needs program going on at the Neighbor's Place, and we always also do education and outreach to the community. So we get involved in a whole lot of things, all to help people in our community and let them know that their neighbors are thinking about them.
Now, Bonnie, you're heavily involved in Empty Bowls in Stevens Point. I know there are similar events each year around the state, Wausau, Eau Claire, Oshkosh, other cities. When did the Stevens Point event begin?
We had our first event in 2001. I was part of a committee that was charged with obtaining funding somehow or other for the Hunger and Poverty Prevention Partnership. And somebody sort of floated the idea of the Empty Bowls event, and we decided that we wanted to try to adapt it to our community and see how things went.
Okay. Now, Jim, you got involved in fighting poverty a few years ago, specifically homeless kids in the school system. I know the story about how this started, but I would love for you to share it with our listeners. How'd you get involved in this project?
Well, I was at Hiawatha Restaurant having breakfast, and I saw my friend Brad Peck, who's the principal at Wausau East, and we just started talking about if there was a group of kids at Wausau East that I could help, and because I graduated from there.
Yes.
And he said, sure. He says, we have some homeless kids. And it was like getting hit right in the head. I was like, homeless kids. I mean, because you just don't relate to Wausau having any homeless kids. So we raised some money, and then I called him back, and I said, well, how many homeless kids are there in Wausau schools? And he said, well, 135. And then I called Dr. Christine Gilmore at DC Everest, and I said, well, how many homeless kids do you have? And she said at that time it was 165. And then I talked to my friends at the NTC Alternative School, and they had 35. So my project of helping a few kids went from 15 to 350, like overnight.
Right. I think that number is pretty shocking when you first hear it. And I know when you and I first talked about this, you said, I just couldn't believe that there was that kind of need there.
It's crazy. And, you know, the more serious thing, Shireen, is the fact that Blessings in a Backpack feeds 1,200 kids a week. So at one time, Wausau Schools, Amy, sent me a wish list for kids for boots and shoes, and it was 850 pairs of shoes and 850 pairs of boots. So the difference between homelessness for kids and poverty is between their 150 homeless and, you know, 850 kids in poverty.
Wow. I did talk with East Principal Brad Peck about this issue some time back, and some of the things he told me stood out. He said homeless children are more likely to be diagnosed with learning disabilities. They are more likely to miss school and change schools. They're more likely to drop out, score lower on standardization tests. That means teachers find themselves working not only to help children learn, but to clothe them, keep them clean, counsel them through their personal challenges. I guess it's hard to imagine focusing on math or English when you're a child worried about where your next meal is going to come from.
You know, Shireen, I in meeting with the administrators at the school, we found that there were kids that were not able to get bus passes because they didn't fit the criteria of the federal program where you have to have an address.
Really? Okay.
And so these kids would have to walk to school. If they were within 2 miles, they had to walk to school if it was raining, snowing, and then sit in school all day long, wet. And then most of them didn't have good hygiene in the first place, so things like bullying come into play. So those are the things that we focused on. First of all, getting them to school. We bought bus passes. Getting them a hot lunch because they didn't qualify for the hot lunch program, so we paid the balances. So every child in Wausau and DC Everest school systems gets a hot lunch for at least the last year now. And then we raised money for hygiene programs, products, you know, socks. And then last year we bought 4,500 pairs of socks and underwear, boots and shoes, jackets, hats and gloves. So the last 2 years we've helped over 750 kids. So it's gone really well. It's been really... to me, very heartwarming being able to help these kids and like I've said in the past, just giving them a chance.
Tom, you and Jim have worked together before, yes?
We have, and it's just incredible to listen to this story. You know, it doesn't take you very long to understand that if these children don't have this kind of assistance, if they aren't, you know, coming to school, being able to not have to worry about where their meals are coming, what kind of clothes they're wearing, whether they have warm enough, you know, clothing to wear at winter and during the winter months and that kind of thing. How in the world do we think that they're going to learn? And then what is their path out of poverty? I just, you know, what Jim is doing here in our community is just tremendous. It's a wonderful example of what this community is. The kind of people that keep the neighbor's place going from year to year, that reach out to those in need and say, not in our community is this kind of thing going to happen. the important thing, I think, for people to reach out and do this is that they know that the problem exists. So thank goodness you were at the Hiawatha that morning, because I really do believe that you know, a lot of it is just knowing that this problem exists. If they do, we've found, at least our experience at the Neighbors Places, that people in this community will reach out and help their neighbors, and they just don't want their community to be one that does not reach out to people.
Bonnie, it sounds like some of the reasons you got involved mirror some of these same things, yes?
That's true. I was a registered nurse, and I was working in a clinic where I was doing pregnancy tests on uninsured women. And I know from my own experience how hungry you can get when you're pregnant. And I was worried about these people. And so having the opportunity to participate in the Empty Bowls events was really a good thing for me. I was glad to get involved in it. And our community has been amazing also. The Empty Bowls concept is appealing to a lot of people, and boy, we just have the most amazing response from people who are interested in helping feed hungry people.
You have a lot of volunteers in the Stevens Point Empty Bowls effort?
Oh boy, do we ever. Starting with the committee, you know, we on the committee are volunteers. The people who make the bowls, they volunteer their services.
Yeah, who makes the bowls? I was going to ask you that.
Oh, gosh. We have some professional and amateur potters who will make bowls. We also have bowl painting events where we purchase bisque-fired bowls and glazes, and then community groups get together and paint bowls. We have church groups, and we have Boys and Girls Club, and we have university, and sometimes there are employee groups from, for example, the hospital or maybe a nursing home or someplace. They want to paint bowls for us, so we are happy to accommodate them. We generally need about 1,200 bowls for each event, and we certainly can't find enough potters to make those bowls. So we've got those bowls, and then we have the restaurants that donate the soups and the breadsticks. We have a bakery that's providing bread. We have churches that provide cookies, and I'm the cookie lady for our committee, and I collect between 3,000 and 4,000 home-baked cookies.
Wow.
In a couple of days. My car will smell like peanut butter for a while, but that's fine. And then we have a raffle where we have gift baskets full of things that are donated by community members and businesses. We have some entertainment at the event for people to appreciate while they eat.
And your event is next month.
It is. It's October 19th.
At Spash?
In Stevens Point at the senior high school. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Well, we need to take a break. Jim Nick, Tom Rao, Bonnie Beverstock, our guests today on Route 51. As we continue our discussion on tackling hunger and homelessness in central and northern Wisconsin. When we return, we'll discuss some of the unique challenges faced by homeless students in our area and some ongoing efforts to help. You can join the conversation too, 800-780-9742. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. Jim Nick, Tom Rao, Bonnie Beverstock, our guests today as we continue our discussion on tackling hunger and homelessness in central and northern Wisconsin. We'd love to hear from you, too. You can call us in 800-780-9742. That's the number to call. When we hear the word homeless, it's sometimes easy to dismiss that as a big city problem. We talked about that a little bit earlier in the program. But I want to share some numbers of homeless students in our area school district. These are some of the most recent numbers from the Wisconsin Department of Instruction by school district for the last school year. So these were last year's numbers. Wisconsin Rapids, 167 homeless students last year. DC Everest had 130, Wausau 189, Tomahawk 108, Stevens Point 136, Rice Lake 75, Adams Friendship 57, Eau Claire had 311, Lac du Flambeau 79, Wapaka County had 84, even Marion, that's such a tiny community, population of, what, 1,200 people, 23 students who were homeless. I guess, do those numbers surprise any of you?
No, it. You know, I think had I not been involved with this for a number of years, they might have. I think they would shock a lot of people listening this morning, though, to hear those kinds of numbers. It's, as we say, have said here, you know, how do these students dealing with that at these young ages, how do they move on and create a life for themselves, get an education and, you know, kind of transition out of poverty? You know, it is a tremendous issue in our area.
And some of these numbers are probably underreported. I mean, when we talk to educators, they tell us that students will do anything they can to hide that. They don't want to be stigmatized. They don't want people to know.
Well, you have to remember, Shireen, that more than half of these kids are elementary school.
Elementary school.
So that's the big problem is you know, first of all, identifying the kids and then, you know, figuring out how you can help them. The one thing we did was we bought 300 backpacks a year so the counselors could fill the kids' backpacks with food and supplies. So then when they went home, they could just put their backpack on because in the past they'd have to carry either paper bags or clear plastic bags. So then, you know, again,
and everybody knows
they're homeless kids, right?
I remember when you and I talked about this first, you said, I wanted good backpacks, too. I didn't want, like, I didn't want backpacks that identified these kids as being in poverty. So you ended up securing some really great.
Yeah, we bought really nice backpacks, multitudes of colors and sizes for different age kids. And, you know, that's the thing, too. Again, this year we're going to look at buying some more backpacks. And, you know, people always ask me, how long are you going to do this? And I keep saying, I don't see it ending. I mean, I think we'll be doing it. We could actually do our program and Bonnie could do her program. We could do it 12 months a year very easily. And because things, you know, as you look at those numbers, things, it's not like they're improving.
I just, you know, we've done a program with elementary schools here in our area in Wausau, and we've sent out staff members from the neighbor's place to provide some after-school programming. And as a part of that, we typically bring food along. And I remember one story that they came back and told me about that just kind of, you know, just really added to this whole thing. There was a boy who was always very active and happy, and they were making hamburgers that particular as a little snack, you know, little ones. Mm-hmm. And they noticed that, you know, he got real quiet during this, and whenever all of the kids were eating their snack, he didn't eat his. And then at the end of it, he came over, you know, and he was talking, and the teacher said, well, we noticed you didn't eat anything. And he said, no, what are you going to do with the ones that were left over? And they said, would you like those? And it was then that they realized that this kid in grade school was thinking about brothers and sisters at home. He didn't eat his hamburger, and he took home the extra ones so that not just he would have something to eat, but his family. And I thought, at that age, this child has to think about something like that. I think that's kind of, you know, eating is one thing, but having to deal with those kinds of problems at that age, it's, you know, really something. Brought it all into perspective for me.
It's heartbreaking, really. I mean, I can't imagine going through something like that.
Well, yeah, it brought a tear to my eye. It still does, you know, just telling about it, you know, to think that a child in grade school has to think about that.
Bonnie, does your effort with Empty Bowls help children specifically or families? I mean, how is the that distributed?
The money.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. We generally take in about $20,000 a year, and that money is made available as grants to anybody in the community who has a food pantry or is feeding children or seniors. For example, grant recipients from 2018 included the Boys and Girls Club of Portage County, the Interfaith Food Pantry of Portage County, the McKinley Center, which is a school. They have a backpack program, the Stevens Point YMCA, and the Central Wisconsin Children's Museum. We helped feed kids in the county that way.
Are there other community partners involved? I saw on the Empty Bowl Stevens Point website that the Hunger and Poverty Prevention Partnership is a part of this. What is that exactly?
Right. It's a partnership that was formed in, I think, the year 2000 at a hunger summit. And some of the groups that came out of that were, number one, the Empty Bowls Committee, but also the mobile pantry, which is a van that takes food out to people in the county who are not able to come in into town to pick up staples. There are giving gardens that donate produce, and then there's a gleaning produce group that gets together and takes care of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Tom, I wanted to ask you, I mean, when we talk about homelessness, we think about people living on the street. That isn't always the case with these kids, though. I hear the term couch surfing frequently.
Yeah.
What does that mean exactly?
Well, and I'm not exactly an expert on this, but, you know, what it means is that the kids may be staying at some of their friends' houses, or, you know, distant relatives, that somehow their parents, are not able to have a home for them, or they don't feel safe in those homes. And so they spend it in, a friend's house or a lot of different kinds of situations. And sometimes they end up couch surfing in houses that may not be the kind of houses that we want those kids to be staying in after school, as I understand it. So,
okay. And your efforts at the Neighbor's Place go beyond helping kids. You help families. You help individuals.
Well, you think about we have a wonderful school system that provides, a breakfast in the morning, snacks, and, meals to children, and programs that provide after school. What happens when these schools are not operating? We think about that in the summer, because we always see the numbers at our pantry go up, because all of a sudden the children are now at home and they need more food in that family to be able to serve these children that had been getting good meals at the school. So, yeah, we're involved in a lot of different ways, but I think trying to relieve some of the stress by providing food for their families so that during the rest of the year they do have adequate food to feed their children are a big part of it. Right now, we're open 5 days a week at the Neighbor's Place, and we are regularly seeing an average of 85 families a day coming in for food, and that's just at our pantry. And like yesterday, we had over 125 families come in one day. So the numbers are not going down in our community, and the need is still great. And I have to say this about Empty Bowls. We were chatting about this before we came in, and we do an Empty Bowls event also. We're a little younger than they are, so we haven't been doing it as long. But the beauty of Empty Bowls is that anybody who does it says to a different community, go ahead, steal our idea. Do it. This is how we do it. This is how maybe it would work in your community. And from its very inception, the idea of Empty Bowls was, go ahead and try it in your community, and if it works, more power to you. and then try to spread the word about how an event like this can deal with hunger in your area.
And it has gone worldwide.
Yeah.
This idea. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I saw that. It's really, the empty bowls movement is really spreading.
It is, you know, it's just a learning from beginning to end. We were talking about lines. And lines are part of empty bowls because it kind of imitates the soup lines or the lines that people stand in to get food. We were thinking about the Bahamas and what happened there. There's going to be a lot of people standing in line to get food. When you come to an empty bowl event, you're going to be standing in a line to get it, and we're hoping that you're thinking about around the world, around our country, and maybe even in our own area, people are standing in line to get food.
We have a caller, Nate from Friendship, is on the line. Thanks for calling, Nate. What was your question?
My question is, and I must preface this by saying I did grow up in poverty. I decided at a relatively young age this is not for me, and my life has been relatively successful. When, though, and I do assist with food pantry, that kind of thing in our local area, when do we start looking at the parents of these children and say, it's time for you to get on the ball and pull your share of the load? We can't have the taxpayers and the volunteers continually enabling these parents to not take care of their children.
Okay.
I think it's a generational thing. It's just a question that I just haven't been able to come up with an answer.
Bonnie wants to weigh in on that.
Yeah. I have a comment on that. There are lots and lots of people out there who are just one check, paycheck away from disaster, and any little thing like an illness can throw them out of their homes, have them lose their jobs. I was selling raffle tickets for empty bowls one day at the farmer's market in downtown Stevens Point. And a man came up to me, and I asked him if he'd be interested in buying a raffle ticket for empty bowls. And he said, no, I see those people, and they're standing in those lines, and they really should be getting jobs and taking care of things, taking care of themselves. And I asked him, I said, so... He used the word deadbeat. I don't like the word deadbeat, but it was his word. I said, who bothers you more, the poor deadbeats in your community or the rich deadbeats?
Tom, what do you have to say about that?
Well, it's a question that I think we all have to deal with when we work in this. First of all, you know, I would simply say that when it comes to children, you know, children are born to the families they're born to. And so I think that's a whole different issue. And, you know, making sure that children have an opportunity to grow up and perhaps pursue lives that will take them out of poverty is really an important thing. But I also agree that at the neighbor's place, we see a whole variety of people. We always like to say, and this is true, that the people that come through our pantry, 75 to 80% of them are working. They just are working in jobs that either don't have benefits or are not paying enough for them to support their families. And one little item, a car breaking down, an illness where they have to be hospitalized, all those little things that so many people like myself just, oh, we dig into a little bit of our savings and pay for, that can throw that whole family in a big loop, and all of a sudden they don't have enough money to be able to feed their family. We also have people with disabilities, you know, whether they're cognitive or physical disabilities that, you know, are just not, they're just not going to be able to hold down the kind of jobs that that would be able to support a family. So there are a lot of reasons. Many of them are beyond our control. And I will say one last thing. My family, I come from farm background. And I remember my grandmother especially telling me how a lot of the families would send their children to the farm, the families that lived in the city, especially around the time of the Depression. They would send their children out to their farm relatives because at the farm they could grow food, and they knew that those children would always have something to eat. Those were hardworking people back then. I think we have some hardworking people right now, but they just weren't able to generate enough money to be able to properly take care of their family. But back then, we lived in closer communities where our families were around and willing to help us through these situations. A lot of the people that we see in our pantry don't have family in the area that can help them through those rough spots. So there's so many reasons that I don't think that you can look at people in poverty and say, oh, they're lazy. I sometimes think they work so hard just to be poor, trying to get, you know, get the things and do the work and go from this job to this job, that it would make all of us tired.
Thanks for weighing in on that, and thanks for the call, Nate. Something that Tom said reminded me of a conversation that I had with you, Jim, some time ago when we talked about this issue. And you just kept saying over and over, this is about the kids.
Well, you know something, Shereen. When I started the Friends of Wausau, the food drive that we did, it was just another deal. I was just driving across town to meet some friends at Domino for a drink, and my XM radio went out, and Dave Calloway came on and said, the Salvation Army is 300 turkeys short. So I'm just driving. I'm like, well, that means 300 families won't have Christmas dinner. So I called my friends at Triggs and said, how much is a turkey? And then he said, how many do you need? And I said, 300. And he said, you know, somebody else called, and we'll work something out. So they did a deal where we bought 10 turkeys for $150. They would donate 10 because some other people were making a donation. In 45 minutes, we raised enough money to buy the 300 turkeys. We delivered them the following Monday, and by Tuesday at 4, they had distributed the 300 food baskets, including turkeys. So, you know, at the end of the day, with the kids, as we talked about, the NTC Alternative School, those kids send me thank yous, and which is something I don't expect. But when you read those thank yous, it just says, dear Mr. Nick, thank you for the jacket, thank you for the boots, thank you for the shirt and the socks and underwear. My parents are drug addicts. I live with a neighbor. I've lived on my own since I was 14. You know, so it truly is about the kids. I mean, the parents' argument is a totally different deal that I really don't even want to get involved with that. I just want to help the kids do as much as we can do as a community and help to brighten their days and brighten their future.
All right, we need to take a break. Jim Nick, Tom Rau, Bonnie Beverstock, our guests today on Route 51. We'll continue our discussion on tackling hunger and homelessness in central and northern Wisconsin. When we return, we'll talk about some upcoming events, ongoing efforts that can help mitigate the problem in our area. You can join the conversation, too, 800-780-9742. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Jim Nick, Tom Rau, and Bonnie Beverstock are our guests today on Route 51, continuing that discussion on tackling hunger and homelessness in central and northern Wisconsin. You can join the conversation by calling 800-780-9742. So, Tom, your time at the neighbor's place is slowly coming to a close as you're preparing for retirement at the end of the year. I have to ask you, what do you consider are some of the biggest successes that you've seen there?
Well, certainly, you know, when I'm always a little uncomfortable talking about the successes, because I first of all want to say that none of these successes wouldn't have happened or would have happened without the support of a wonderful variety of boards of directors, a terrific staff that I've had the privilege to work with at the neighbor's place, and most importantly, the support of a community that allowed us to do this. One of the things that I'm most happy about is that when I came, there was a mortgage on the neighbor's place. We were able to get rid of that mortgage and own the building now and be able to do our work in a building that we don't have to spend money. What we spend our money on is helping the people and running the programs that we have there. I'm also very proud of the fact that we're one of the groups now in our community that do empty bowls, along with so many other communities around the area. I think it's an important program, an educational program. And then I am very, very happy with us expanding the reach out into the community, drawing in volunteers, drawing in other groups and businesses and people like Jim here to be involved in the issues that we're involved in.
You know, Jim, when you first got involved in the school effort, I know that you reached out to all of your contacts. I mean, you were making calls hours and hours a day. Were you getting a lot of positive responses right away? I mean, were people surprised when you asked them for help?
So this wasn't a well-planned-out effort, Shereen. It basically was me at home putting a post on Facebook on a Sunday and asking and sharing it to public and asking people to share it and asking them for help. And it was shared 727 times. But I also left my cell number and my email, and I told everyone that I would get back in touch with them. So that wasn't the smartest thing I've done, because I was honestly up till midnight most nights and then back up again at 3, 4 in the morning responding to people. We used my office as a warehouse, so the first couple years we had just had people from the community coming in, sorting clothes. We deliver them to the schools. Now we have a much better process. But what happens is after the first couple of years, people ran out of clothes. So we have to lean on our corporate friends, East Bay, Kohl's. Kohl's gives us 50% off on everything, and they shop for me, which is huge. Chatterbox Charities, Cloverbelt Credit Union. I mean, companies in the Wausau area that Weinbrenner Thoroughgood Boots gave us 350 pairs of boots 1 year at $150 a pair.
Wow.
It's been all the comments, 95% of the comments have all been positive. And the same thing that happened originally was that people just didn't understand that there was even a problem. I mean, I thought I was the most shocked person in the building. Well, all these people were the most shocked people in the building. No one knew about it.
And that circles back to something that both Bonnie and Tom said, that really half the battle is letting people know that this exists.
Right. It's absolutely true. And I can't help but think, you know, we think about the children, and another issue that we've been dealing with for quite a while now is the elderly in our community. Because we are a rural community, I think that there are a lot of elderly living on that razor's edge of poverty, and a lot of them that we don't even find out there. As we reach out to, you know, pantries in smaller areas and churches, we're hoping to reach those people and let them know that there is an opportunity, you know, to help them, you know, through the pantries around Marathon County. They have such pride that they've worked all their lives, and they are embarrassed that maybe they're having a little trouble being able to feed themselves or handle the bills in their area. These are all the people that are helped by all the programs that we have and the pantries that we have around Marathon County.
I was just taking a look at the most recent poverty figures, the most recent health rankings. You think about Milwaukee County, you expect that because you know that it's a more urban area. You're going to have that. Menominee County actually tops the list at 27%, but Ashland 15%, Forest County 16%, Grant County 17%,
Langlade County, 14%. These are all, you know, within our listening area. Adams County, 14% of people living in poverty. And that's just, that's just an estimate of the numbers that we see. You know, you were talking about how Empty Bowls could, you know, has grown. This is something that other communities could certainly mimic and put on, yes?
I think there are a number of them in mm-hmm. our areas that actually do. I think we were talking Mosinee, and I think there's one up in Merrill now, and you know, here mm-hmm. in Wausau.
There's one in Marshfield, and Waupaca has one, and so it's an idea that really has spread, and people are so interested in the whole concept of it. And one of my experiences in picking up cookies from the churches is that I will go in and pick up like maybe 8 dozen cookies, and the people at the church will say thank you to me. And no, I need to thank you because you made the cookies. But they're thanking me for the opportunity to be of assistance. People know that there's hunger in the county, and they're looking for ways to help. And we're so grateful for our communities.
Chris from Adams called. He did not want to be on the air, but Chris had just made the comment that food, thanks to these pantries and these efforts, can be available. But sometimes housing is the big issue, and I mean that seems to be a whole other discussion. I mean, Tom, what do you think about that?
Well, it is an issue, and there's I know that the United Way here in Marathon County has a housing and homelessness coalition that works regularly on that, bringing together different groups to try and find ways that they can, you know, reduce the amount of people that are struggling to find good homes to live in or affordable apartments to live in. I think that's been one of the strengths of our communities, is that willingness to work together with each other. I'm always reminded when we first started the Hunger Coalition here in Marathon County, which gathered all kinds of pantries and food banks and together to work with each other, our embarrassment a little bit back then, we were all a little worried about how is that going to affect our organization. And now, years later, I have a little sign on my computer that says, "It's about the people, stupid." And, it was so obvious and yet so hard to see back then, that by working together, we make much bigger impacts on the problems that we're trying to deal with. The problems are big enough. We ought to be getting together. And I'm very proud of the way the communities have gotten together to work on these issues, whether it's housing, whether it's food. No matter what, we're more powerful when we work together with each other, and experience has shown us that. I know the Hunger Coalition brings so many more pounds of food that's available to all our pantries just by getting together. So,
Jim, as you continue your work with the schools, what would you like to see happen? What more needs to be done? What do the kids really need?
You know, it's the same things. We need to continue to raise money to buy toiletries. And when they called me, they wanted some shoes and boots for kids, and they wanted sizes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So I called my buddy Tom up at Baseman's. I said, "What size is that?" Mm-hmm. And he said, "Well, those are for little kids." So, you know, the biggest thing when my program started with Help the Kids, people in the community would donate $20 or $50 or $100, and that's where the success came, because now we're at a point where we have to buy a lot of stuff. We don't have as much stuff donated, so it's just we go through in a 3-month period between $115,000 and $130,000 between money and clothing. It's huge.
Where can people go to help your efforts?
Well, we'll start doing I think this is probably a good time to start. Clover Belt Credit Union had drop sites at all their locations, any of my offices in Wausau, Marathon, or Athens.
And that's the American Family.
American Family mm-hmm. Agency. Any Nicolet Bank, there's an account set up there for Help the Kids, and people can just stop by there and make a donation. You know, it's just one of those things where it seems like we just ended this last year because winter went so long, but now it's time to start again. And you know, we were blessed a little bit one year because winter came late, but we don't know when winter's going to come. So we might as well start things now. I'll send a message out on Facebook and get people in gear. And we have a great community. We have a lot of people that really do care, that do help, that have helped every year. So I'm looking forward to it.
Tom, when is the Empty Bowls event in Wausau, and where will it be held?
It's going to be held Saturday, November 23rd, and it'll be at Wausau West High School.
Okay, and there's a raffle, there's...
All of the things that we were talking about happening down in Point are happening up here, too. We have a silent auction. We have raffle tickets going to be going on sale. And if you need more information or are interested in getting a ticket ahead of time or a raffle ticket ahead of time, you can just get in touch with us at the Neighbor's Place. And the phone number there is 715-845-1966. And our website is neighborsplace.org.
All right. And Bonnie, the Stevens Point event is coming up pretty quickly. When and where?
It will be on October 19th from 11 to 2, and it will be at the Stevens Point Senior High School.
Okay, are you still looking for volunteers for that event?
We are looking for volunteers. There is a website. Oh, gosh. We just changed volunteer websites, and I don't remember what the new one is called. But
you have a Facebook page.
Yes, we have a Facebook page, and there should be a link.
Okay, and your website for Empty Bowls, people can visit that for more information as well.
Empty Bowls, Portage County, or if they want, they can look at the Portage County Hunger and Poverty Prevention Partnership.
Okay, thank you very much. Before we close our show this week, I want to take a moment to recognize the passing of Glenn Mollberg. As many of you know, and forgive me, I'm getting a little emotional. He started Route 51 more than 15 years ago. Wisconsin Public Radio was the last chapter in his very successful career in journalism. It was a show that was a reflection of his great love for central Wisconsin and the people in it. For years, he entertained, he informed. His subjects ranged from politics to pop culture. He won over listeners, and he won so many awards for his incredible work. But most importantly, Glenn made our lives richer and better. He left this world over Labor Day weekend after a year-long battle with stomach cancer. He is survived by his wife, his two children, and all of us who listen to him each week on this program and loved him so very much. That is all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seewert. I'd like to thank our guests, Jim Nick, Tom Rau, and Bonnie Beverstock. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer. Joy Ratch-Kramer produced this program. Our on-air producer today is Jane Ritger. Special music today from Randy Sabine. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program at wpr.org/Route 51. Next week, we'll talk about the best fall reads and the upcoming Central Wisconsin Book Festival. Until then, we're heading out of town.
To ask you, answer if you can. Is there anybody here who can tell me what is the soul of a man? Well, I want somebody to tell me. Answer if you can. I want somebody.